Welcome to the broadcast of Project Urantia on the Artist First Radio Network. A growing number of people are coming to the realization, perhaps our planet has been guided by celestial beings for a very, very long time. And in my humble opinion, the man who knows more about this than just about anyone on the planet is our guest of honor every hour. That's Michael in Maui. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Z-Man.
How's life in paradise this week?
It's beautiful. It's really looking like a paradise today.
It's been beautiful, beautiful here in Ohio. It's spring. It's May 15th, 2012. We are not far from the all-important, or is it all-important, December 21st. Hey, there was I caught a very small snippet of a news article about another Mayan calendar that may have been discovered recently that, oh my, may contradict the 2012 prediction. Did you hear about that?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Think there's any merit to it?
Well, the Mayan calendar ended. That's all it was. It was, as far as this other calendar, still goes through some sort of checkup, but it's an extension beyond the Mayan calendar's timetable, I believe. But I'm not worried about that as much as, you know, those who, you know, look at the Mayan calendar as being something as indicating perhaps the end of the planetary reality that we, you know, end of the planet's habitation or something. But I look more towards what I have been at least warned about, and others who are following similar guidelines, and that includes Riley and Nancy Leader. We're all pretty much coming up with a similar deduction that celestials are involved in helping us make sure that we can at least move through this time a little better than if it wasn't without their help.
Well, of course, we talked about Riley was going to make a prediction last week, which he did. I want to thank Jim Borath for sending me a link to the show. I got to listen to it, even though I'm not a serious subscriber. Uh-oh, am I pirating music? I might be in trouble here. But I did listen to the program. That's the first show I've heard on Sirius Radio in many years since the last time I visited Riley, I think, which is back in 2007 or 8, maybe. If I could just make one comment, I was shocked at the number of callers who called into the program and had nothing but vulgar, disgusting, useless, nothing to say about the program. And I was shocked at how much that detracts from the program. Why they put up with that, I don't know. That's just my comment. But thank you, Jim Borath, for sending it to me, and I did get a chance to listen to it. So let's get into what he said. One thing I forgot to tell you, Michael, before air, that Riley mentioned was there's some kind of a crude alignment going to be happening with the planets. He said it wasn't linear, but it was some kind of an alignment that was going to cause gravitational problems with the Earth's mantle. On the other predictions, as I understand it, folks, I did listen to it, but I might have missed something. The other things he talks about are large crafts he called sky rakers, which are, I think he said, measured anywhere from a few miles across to many miles across. We're going to act like blockers at a football game, if necessary, to deflect any electromagnetic pulses or similar, and that they would also be seeding our atmosphere with gold, platinum, other metals in microscopic fashion to help mitigate those issues. Michael, what are your thoughts about all that?
Well, it's something that I have been aware of for a while. I wasn't sure on the actual way in which such shielding would be accomplished. With using these types of like gold nanoparticles, I'm not sure exactly what is you know, its effect would be in terms of working with whatever forces it may be, you know, probably trying to shield from. You know, these shieldings look like they have to do with perhaps microparticle bombardment, and I think maybe other types of radiant energy. But you know, it ties in closely with other effects that are being observed right now. We are, you know, we are seeing very strange, anomalous magnetic compressions in our magnetosphere, and they could indeed be coming from the sun's effect, which would probably have the greatest effect. However, there are other celestial alignments, and the movement of perhaps exoplanetary object, which Nancy Leader is the expert in Planet X, and they're all coming into play right now, and we are all pretty much saying the same thing, that there is celestial involvement in lessening the effect for the, you know, the preservation of our planet.
Riley did acknowledge during his lead into his predictions that the Celestials had what he called large drones out in the sun's corona, trying to mitigate these problems. Michael, what is the temperature of the sun's corona? What'd you guess?
Well, it's a temperature that we can produce here, in perhaps in our plasma welding, plasma cutter, and this, I think in some of the arc electric arcs that we produce. We produce temperatures that are equivalent to the sun's heliosphere.
But, I mean, are we talking 10,000 degrees, 100,000, a million?
I don't know. Offhand, I don't know. I just equate them to how the, you know, you just watch how it just blows away steel like nothing, you know. And, I mean, playing around with plasma cutters and stuff.
Well, and I don't know the answer to that question. Again, we seem to be being bombarded now on the History Channel, the Discovery Channel, Learning Channel. All these channels all have now, you know, things about the end times, things about aliens, things about the NASA astronauts seeing, you know, bogeys outside their windows. There just seems to be an onslaught of these types of programs because I suppose that's what the public appetite is for. But I just heard a couple conflicting stories from some of these so-called knowledgeable programs on what the temperature of the corona of the sun is, and I just wanted to ask you that. Before I forget, I had a person stop me on the street today and asked me, a co-worker, asked me to ask you the following question. How do the Celestials travel through space at such incredible speeds that they can defy the known laws of physics?
Transdimensional shifting is actually the way they didn't give me that word. I asked that question in a sense, as I tried to get, you know, the secrets of the universe, what is gravity and time, and these kinds of questions I was asking, but also asked a question about how, you know, we're going to go smashing through the asteroid belt and how we made it here in such quick time. And the answer from one of them, who was a Zeta type, was we don't move. And the interesting thing was how I didn't feel any motion. Like I didn't feel like I was in an aircraft flying. How come I felt like there was just nothing going on? You know, just was standing there or sitting there, depending on, you know, and just walk around without any worry about inertia or anything like that. And this, they looked at me and they said, the reason for that is you never moved. And I said, what? We went from here to there. We didn't move. Yes, he says, we moved the universe. What? You moved the universe. You mean the entire universe? Yes. We move the universe. That's how simple we can put it, and that is the truth. We simply move the entire universe, and you stood still. Our concept says we bend space, we bend time. Their statement says move the whole universe. Because in their practice and what they're doing, that's what they're actually accomplishing in transdimensional shifting. They're moving the universe, time-space lock, and are able to move the entire universe to where they're at. So they plot the position. I remember when I said, do you want to go on the way back? Where you want to go? I said, well, let's go not straight back. Well, I want to go stop by Mars. Well, the pilot or the craft operators, they asked him directly. They didn't say, okay. They asked the pilot. You might call him the pilot. And his response was, let me check. And then he checked and he plotted it in. He says, okay, we can be done. Yeah. And boom, we did it. Everything went opaque from the observation. We were just after the discussion of where they were from, pointing at somewhere around Orion's belt and saying, that's where I'm from. And then the other guy's pointing someplace down lower, different stars and different groups. And they're naming where they're from. And then after that, I asked to go to Mars, and then that dome where we were looking at just turned dark. You couldn't see through it, opaque. And next thing I know, he says, okay, it turns clear again, and then there's Mars. And I can see Mars, and as a result, I said, you moved Mars to where we were. So it's all this plotting and shifting in terms of coordinates, in time-space coordinate-type movements. And so like they sort of move the entire universe transdimensionally. So this was something that took me, and I'm still trying to understand it from there, trying to make it very simple. And that's what I'm going to pass along, is a simple statement as they gave to me so that I could carry, I guess, that simple statement back with me and share it. But I don't know if anybody else came up with the same statement.
Well, the writers of Futurama, the cartoon Futurama, the Planet Express spaceship the professor created, they asked him how it runs. He said the exact same thing. I know you people watch that show like I do, and I know you guys remember him saying that. I move the universe around the ship. Ship doesn't move through the universe. The universe moves around me. You know, many people in the UFO field have guessed at something similar or something is going on, because often when people try to videotape a UFO, it's fuzzy. It seems like there's some kind of field they are within. Is that like, can they create, is another way to explain this, that they're inside a bubble that really isn't in our universe? Or
yeah,
is partially in our universe, so that they're inside that bubble.
Yeah, that's what it is. They're inside of that bubble, you might say. Yeah, and if they do lock into our time coordinate, they'll lock into time space and be subject to the exact. They did say that that is another mode of movement, and then they would be just the same as what, subject to the same problems and physics that we are always incurring, aerodynamics, and that was another reason they said they had the wing shape, because they do incur use of lift, because that wing did have two surfaces, the top surface, because I got to see it edge on, so I was able to see the shape of the wing, and the wing was, although very, 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 very thick, had a normal wing shape with the top surface curved and the bottom surface flat, although the bottom surface had holes in them. I wasn't sure about what that was for.
So they can use traditional atmospheric transportation when they need to and when they go need these?
Well, they said it. They didn't use it in the same way we would use it, but it helps them move through the atmosphere at a certain type of, I guess, interaction with our domain, I guess, where we at, our place, our stuff.
Well, gee, on Star Trek, I think they used to call it the inertia dampeners. You know, when you accelerate, folks, you've been on a roller coaster, accelerates, it pins you back in your seat. Well, at the acceleration these things do, it would liquefy you.
Absolutely.
And the turns they make, you would just be like paint up against the wall. They have to have, you know, I don't know, maybe their science is so far ahead, they do have things like inertia dampeners, but then again, if your explanation, when they're inside if the universe is moving around them, then there is no centrifugal force.
Yeah, there's no inertia. The common laws of movement in physics like that are not working because they're not really in motion.
Well, Michael, one more question. By the way, that was from Greg Skivalok. Yeah, I got to mention Greg's name. So, Greg, I did ask him, and there was one more question he wanted me to ask you, which was, what type of power supply would a craft like that need to accomplish the interdimensional travel?
Okay, that's another question that was locked into what powers New Jerusalem, what powers their craft, what is their power source? And it came out to a simple request. Can I see the engine? And they were puzzled a little bit. They kind of looked at me, engine. They looked at each other. Ah, you want to know power source? Okay. And we went on to go. And that's on that trip where we went and to this grand deck, tremendous open space deck. The big, huge V-wing craft was up there where I got to see it, and we went down and we saw what would be their power source. And their power source, I remember using the trick to remember the name they used for it was Frondelec. It's a Frondelec. And they said they had a few of them in there, and many of the similar energy translators, Frondeleks, were used in their ships for energy. Apparently, is able to manage energies, unbelievable amounts of energy that are pervading space. Space is not empty. Another thing on the way down. I said, what do you need wings for? Space is empty. And the reply was, space is not empty. like exclamation point. And then the introduction to the energy source or energy translator or engine source or whatever. It's a Frondelec. The name is Frondelec, and it's found in the Urantia book. And also, and then I said, wow, it matches my memory trick. You got Frankensteins here. And so it looked like a gigantic bulbous unit that had energy waves, much like how a squid has lines of energy flowing through it as it changes color.
Oh yeah.
And it had that. And as the energy usage increased, those lines and waves began to move quicker and faster. And the description of what kind of output it was putting out, I said, did it put out electrical energy or what kind of energy? And he says, it is a type of energy that they're used to. There's a small amount, there's some electrical energy involved in it, but there are other forms of energy which has to do with being useful interdimensionally. In other words, they pass interdimensionally. They're useful not just in where we are, but in a dimension perhaps where we only theorize. The concept closest to that dimension would be the spiritual energy, spiritual dimension. So those energies are moving beyond our own state. So there's another level of energy that they were actually being able to harness and use or direct through a type or something similar to a living machine. And that's the level of sophistication of their technology. A lot of their concept of their, even their craft, seemed like it was able to react to me alike or to interface with me much like a living being. So this is what it was that was energy. But I can't go beyond that, but there's some energy like electrical energy that is coming out, and water. You said water.
Sounds like a energy cell.
Yeah, like a fuel cell.
You know, we do cripe with fighter. You know, all our cars are becoming more intuitive. In other words, they're reading our human body reactions. They're becoming more aware that we're there. You know, fighter craft with the pilots. You look at it, you shoot it. You know, it seems like we are crawling towards that technology anyway.
Exactly. This is one of the things that the Dano, the high teacher, was trying to tell me, don't worry about the technologies here. You'll be having many of them soon on your planet. And I believe they've been nursing us along in terms of getting there, in terms of really receiving a lot of these types of technologies through our inventiveness, which really comes from a central mind. And that same mind source allows, you know, this type of inspirational knowledge, wisdom to be given to our planet. An example was, of course, the famous Nikola Tesla. And then, you know, there's a lot of perspiration from the other guy, Thomas Edison, but Nikola Tesla was almost all inspiration.
You know, there's one thing I forgot to mention that Riley had spoken about. Forgive me, listeners, I forgot that he said that when this planet alignment happens, that it's going to disturb asteroids and comets and increase our probability of being struck by one, which was another reason why the Skyraker craft was going to need to be in position. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, they're definitely being put in position. They have been in position for quite a long time already. And there's more to that than just the positioning of these craft as defensive shields, because they also will be working with a revealing. So there's going to be a great revealing that will come about too, in a time that will be called by them. And that would be, I think, pretty soon. I'm not sure exactly when.
Yeah, you know, that was my next question.
Yeah.
And Riley was supposed to have given a date, although he said he was going to give it by the end of the program. I had to listen to it at double speed. I may have missed it. I tried to fit the show in the time I had to listen to it. By the way, did you know that, folks? If you're using Windows Media Player, you can double the speed or triple or... You can listen to an hour-long show in 30 minutes. And it doesn't sound like Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Oh, really?
No, it doesn't change the pitch of the voice. It is amazing because, you know, when you only have 30 minutes to listen to an hour show, it is possible. How about we got a couple emails that have come in. Would you mind taking a few email questions there, Michael?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Let's see. Riley Martin speaks of 2026, 14 more years of Evron taking care of him! Michael, NASA calls the Saturn mothership Prometheus. Why do you think they named it that?
Oh, I forgot what Prometheus was.
Oh, now he helps us here. He says Prometheus was a champion of mankind known for his wily intelligence who stole fire from Zeus and gave it to the mortals.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because that's exactly the concept I got do they know more about it than they're willing to admit? And I think they do. There's a lot going on in terms of our legend. That's one of the things that I've looked at, is our ancient cultures and where these concepts of celestial influence have come in and what source they may have come from. Was it, you know, orbiting Saturn all of these years beyond the 2,000 years which was indicated, at least 2,000 years old, but may have been much older and there basically nurturing us along. I'm not sure, but it makes some sense to name it that. And I would say this also. I was, when leaving and called up to the observation deck, the dome became transparent and clear, and they began to show me where they were from, and they showed me, pointed at Orion, you know, pointed at that direction in that area. And in the first glance was a moon, very large a view of a moon, because it was it had cratered surface and everything like that. And it said, "Oh, where did the New Jerusalem go to?" And you know, that was my response. It said, "Is it hiding inside of it, or did it go behind it? Where did it go?" And the response from them was a kind of like a smile. "It's our secret. You figure it out." And I just like, okay, you're letting me see a moon instead of the view of the New Jerusalem that I first saw, which was also captured by Cassini, which is that luminous egg-shaped sphere. And then they show me this. I'm not sure. I think maybe it might even be inside of that moon. So I really don't know. Could go in there, or maybe not. I wouldn't put anything back them.
Now, listen, this is so odd. Years ago, and this has been several years ago, had some lady that just contacted us and just absolutely insisted that she be allowed to come on and tell about her predictions. If I recall, I think she was from Southern Ohio and was a spiritualist, a healer type of things into this stuff. She comes on, do a show with her, and she says that we are going to send a missile to the moon, was one of her predictions. Let's see, which we did. We nuked the bottom of the moon. And she also said that it was going to ring like a bell and the moon was hollow. Now, she, you know, I'm just saying, I don't think about this stuff too often. And here you are saying, well, maybe the Earth is, or maybe the moon is hollow, maybe that moon, or maybe they can imitate a moon to look like a moon, like we can hide from ducks or something when we're hunting. But, you know, maybe that lady knew something. How was she to know years in advance we were going to nuke the moon? I don't know. She did not claim to be involved with aliens of any shape or form, but I just mentioned that. That's on our archive somewhere. I'd have to go back and see that, but I don't know. Do you think the moon is hollow, or that they could do that?
I wouldn't doubt it, and it's something that having the kind of technology that they have, it is technology. You can do many things that stagger our imagination, as we can do many things that can stagger, you know, some more primitive society years ago.
Well, I don't know that I believe that the moon is hollow, but obviously with advanced people like this, they could do pretty much anything they want to.
Yeah, I believe it did indicate that there was a certain, there was chambered, yeah, that there were hollow, vast hollow spaces there. But according to when we first passed it, Tan commented to me that they had a small operation there in the far side of the moon. Small, so I guess when we went to the New Jerusalem, it was major, big comparison to what was going on in the moon.
Dear Michael, will Fukushima kill humanity if reactor 4 falls over full of spent fuel rods? There's an interesting thing to lose sleep over. What do you think?
Actually not, because there will be those heroes again that will come. And if need be, they would give their lives to bury it in a type of chamber of concrete and whatever that would leave those spent fuel rods contained, much like Chernobyl's rods. And by the way, Chernobyl's got to go through it again, so they may contain the containment again.
Yeah, because fusion will fuse through anything, cement included.
But it's spent fuel rods, which are basically radioactive, but they have lost their liveliness to produce heat the way they did at one time.
This event would not be, and the heroes you are referring to are those brave men and women from Japan who went there to work at that site, knowing full well they're going to get enough radiation that will eventually shorten their lives.
Definitely, and also those men in for the Chernobyl event, that the firemen and people like that.
They knew they were toast and they did it anyway.
Yeah.
That is remarkable. This is not that an event of this magnitude, which is horrible, but certainly not species ending.
Yes.
Is probably not a case where they would want to step in and offer some assistance. I'm talking, of course, of the aliens, the Celestials.
They were there at the one of the height of the event, and they had shifted some of the wind here and there. And ultimately watched to make sure that it didn't go to a point of being unmanageable. They were right out there. There's actually some very interesting photographs of a very large craft close by. It was filming, and were not able on their, using their normal human vision to see it, but it came out clear as day on their recording.
You got to wonder if humanity certainly must be an amusement to our celestial friends. They probably popped a bunch of popcorn and said, "Man, this is going to be pretty spectacular. Let's go watch this. Look what look how bad they're screwing this up."
It may be. I don't think so, but I think they do have a sense of humor in some of the events that maybe what we do, but maybe the things where it concerns big mistakes, they were actually warning us about. And Riley did have occasion to comment about their concern about the shape of our nuclear reactors and how many of them were needed to be looked after and perhaps even turned off, because of the nuclear accidents that were just asking to happen. And that was a warning that I think Tan left for him. But all that goes, you know.
So it's kind of like your kid moves out into an apartment and you say, "Hey, you better do something with all those electrical cords. You're going to cause a fire." The next time you show up, the place is on fire.
Yeah.
You don't love your children any less, but you're going, "Come on, man, you know." Do you think the Celestials, they must have infinite patience? Because
actually, they do.
we have screwed up as a species. We have such an abysmal record of just about everything except killing each other, finding new ways to kill each other and keep each other at extremes and, you know, have people fighting with each other. We're really, really good at that.
Mm-hmm.
But just about everything else, I don't know. I give us a D- on just about everything else. They have to care about us. They would have thrown up their hands and left millions of years ago. Or maybe there's nothing else on TV. That could be the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Zochi, I forgot he had a follow-up question. There is a 2012 Hollywood movie coming out called Prometheus. Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. Think that's just sheer coincidence?
I doubt it.
Well, I think, and you know, in all seriousness, I think Hollywood's always ahead of the game. Ask Linda Moulton Howe. I think that they use Hollywood to prepare, to thought adjust, if to use a phrase from you, to get the public accustomed to certain new ideas and ways of thinking. Am I crazy on that?
No, that's not crazy. I think that many of the things that were seeded into the imagination of the creators and writers are coming from celestial sources.
Well, this past week, has there been any further information sent to you you'd like to talk about tonight?
Well, you know, when it comes right down to it, I think that taking a peek at Nancy Leader's website, Zeta Talk, and go ahead and go look at the archives in terms of the most recent archive on their newsletter, and you'll find that it is using a lot more of our own science to basically reinforce some of the things that I've said, as well as they have said, in terms of the influences that are being observed or looked at in terms of our magnetosphere, the concept of shields are down, and of what could be our path right now. Yet both Riley, as well as Riley's most recent exposure, as well as Nancy and myself, have been saying that they have been on a type of protective role right now. But eventually, that will change. And the timing for that, I don't know exactly when. But if it does, there's going to be a need for a lot more intervention in terms of the way our society runs. We'll be probably ready for a tipping point.
Oh, if we only knew when the tipping point was going to be. What would you guys do? And this is
actually, what would you do if you knew it would be in 2 months? Well, you quit your job and do, you know, crazy things. Or would it be what I've been saying all along? Get attuned to the celestial's frequency and harmonize, because that's the voice. Because really, the thing that exposed me to the greatest truth was the ascension process, the fact that they have even a technology that is essentially the Christ resurrection technology, the resurrection technology. And actually place individuals, human beings or other sentient beings, on the road for everlasting life. But that particular choice remains not just in our grip, but in our attunement, in our desire. And that desire, there's no timetable involved. There's no end of an age that we have to worry about, because it is a continuous, ongoing process. And it essentially never ends. So that is the most important point of celestial interchange and exchange. So engagement with the celestial opportunity for full citizenship into the dominion of everlasting life.
Come on, be honest. Do you think there's any human beings alive today that are worthy of that right now?
It's not a matter of worthiness, because it's just a point of you grow into it, you grow up, and like you say, some of the things we do is like, oh, come on. Or it could be a humorous thing to them, you know. Okay, you guys, I told you not to go to that, you're going to fall on your face. And that's exactly what happens. Oh, okay, let me pick you up and get up, dust yourself off, and start all over again.
If you'd like to send a question or comment to this or any program on Artists First, you can always hit us up at DJ at artistfirst.com. I guess everybody, this is going to be an interesting next couple of months because we're only some, 6 months, really about 6 months out from this probably artificial date. However, even Riley mentioned that he thought that these signs would become increasingly evident at first to people, the astronomy people will see what's happening out there, and then later folks might be able to see the molecular seeding of the atmosphere with their bare eyeballs. You know, it just seems to me that if there was a simple, if there was one sign, if something happened, and of course some might argue, yes, man, this has been happening all the time, but the news never covers it. Well, that's true. But if something was just irrefutable, it happened in Paris, it happened in London, it happened in Washington, and, you know, is it possible for the world to get the attention with the media the way it is? I don't know, but I just can't help but...
You know, the acoustics that have been going around the planet, the die-offs, they've been covered by news. Some of this stuff, radiant problems that have actually killed, like, what it looks like to have been. Dolphins in Peru in that area that have maybe got interjected by some high-energy particles. It's like they were burnt. And
from outer space?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't hear about that.
Well, that was, I was trying to get to that point, but then, of course, we had some exciting stuff going on with the program previous, which was...
Well, so something from made it through the atmosphere all the way down to the ocean level and fried some fish in the water.
Well, dolphin.
Dolphin, excuse me. They're mammals, excuse
porpoises.
Me. Wow. That would have to be a pretty powerful amount of energy. Those are big animals.
Yeah, it's called a... there's a scientific a name that they decided to give it because it's a... You know, when they talk about seeding our atmosphere or our our ionosphere or whatever, when energetics impact our magnetosphere, they follow the flux lines, much like, you see those flux lines with ironing and filings over a piece of paper and, you know,
right.
A magnet underneath. Well, when we have a flux transfer event, it sort of acts like a funnel or a whirlpool, a magnetic whirlpool. And if you ever wonder if such things really exist, look at the sun. The sun is full of whirlpools, of magnetic whirlpools and energetics and flowing lines of magnetic energies. Presently, our magnetosphere is in takes a shape similar to Saturn's magnetosphere, which has a toroidal donut shape versus having a dipole, its usual dipole effect. Right now, we're having our magnetosphere has been perturbed to shape like a donut and having some whirlpools in it, like the sun has whirlpools that are commonly called sunspots, and this magnetic whirlpools. And the energetics hit flow down through that and then get bundled up and almost like shot right through this, like you might say the opposite of a tornado event, which sucks things up through it and throws it up. It's the opposite effect, which pulls things into this whirlpool going down the drain, and it shoots right down, bang, and hits the energetics hit the ground. And if you're in that area, you get fried, and it's happened.
And this is something that could happen on land as well as water?
Yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And again, the term is flux transfer events.
Now, was this a rare occurrence, what happened to these unfortunate dolphins, or can we expect more of this stuff?
It was rare, and it's, the problem is that there's more... You know, more to it than like birds. There's more to it than like those birds in New Year's time when they're, you know, it was fireworks and they all went around in a circle and rammed into each other. You know, well, there's a reason maybe they all flew in a circle because of the flux transfer event and their magnetic guidance, and just confused them into a whirlpool and eddy, and then boom, they all collided with each other. And down they came, raining down.
Well, and there have been other puzzling animal deaths in groups. I can't say I can necessarily apply this explanation to some of those, but didn't we have a bunch of, a bunch of pilot whales, or maybe it wasn't pilot whales, but they had a bunch of whales beaching themselves again, and it just seems like it happens all
this
the time.
A similar problem that we're having with our magnetosphere, the guidance because of that is confusing some of these migratory animals, and who depend and have highly developed guidance systems. So that's another indication in terms of the natural world. There's other things like numerous, the Nancy leader's letter pointed out, interestingly enough, the high occurrence of albino occurrences in the animals. You know, the concept of the end of the age was going to be highlighted with the albino buffalo, but that's gone beyond that. To albino being found in many other animal groups more commonly than ever.
By the way,
these again could be caused because of the different ways in which energetics are hitting our planet and down into where we live and where the animals live in the terrasphere, you might say.
I thought I heard that the albino buffalo was or does exist. Is that just tabloid trash?
Oh, it does. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's squeeze an email in. Theodore White wanted to send in a comment about the moon we were talking about a short time ago. There is no factual scientific knowledge of how the moon got into perfect orbit, which is unusual. Scientists speculate on different theories, such as a double collision of other bodies. Your comments, Michael?
Yeah, well, the fact that the moon rotates exactly so that only one side faces our planet may be indicative of the mass and matter accreting in orbit. As a result, it would accrete without it being essentially being held in the static orbit through electrostatics, you might say, that would give it that accretion and allow it to happen. But to have been towed into place is another thing. And then a very important factor was that life as we know it on this planet would not exist in the way it does if it didn't have our celestial body, the primary celestial body of greatest influence, the moon, pumping our planet's life like a heartbeat in terms of the currents of the ocean, the weather systems, things like that. So it could have been placed. I didn't go that far. I know I was sitting in front of some of these monitors, but I don't remember watching that part. I was looking at some other things that they were just letting us observe on their seat, and what. A lot of it having to do with the formation of our solar system, our planet, and life on our planet Uranus.
Are there other examples in our solar system? There's bunches of moons around many of the planets. Other examples like that where they keep a static face in orbit?
I'm not really sure. It's not an area which I really looked into, but it's a good question.
Yeah, maybe it's not as rare as we think if there were other examples. And, of course, listeners, you guys know most of these types of questions because we got some very, very intelligent listeners out there. And with the time I have left here before we run out of time, I just want to say, as we do every week, on behalf of all of the listeners who tune into this program, and it is in the hundreds of thousands, we want to thank Michael for coming on to this broadcast. He does this program because he told his celestial friends that he would do that. That's called keeping your word. He does not get paid. He has nothing to sell. And we do not accept advertising on this broadcast. We want to leave this up there for you guys to decide. Make up your mind. Remember, it's all about free will. You're free to think it. We're as crazy as you'd like. And once again, Michael, on behalf of all of our listeners, thank you for the time that you give us on each of these programs.
You're certainly welcome. It's been a privilege and a pleasure.
Now, you're talking like you're leaving us, man. Are you getting on the craft? Are you getting the hell out of here?
Yeah, maybe. I'm actually... One of the things that the characteristic is, if you've been invited, don't ever look back. Just go.
Yeah, so there may come a time when the phone just rings out there in Hawaii, and we'll know that Michael is, he ain't gone fishing. On that note, everybody, we've got about 1 minute before the CBS News hits us. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next week. Take care, Michael.
Aloha.